This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
If you are offended by potty talk, well, then you might be offended. Hello, and welcome to the Best of the Gist. It is the Saturday show, though this may not be Saturday. I do have to say, it's also, statistically speaking, probably not Sunday, because Sunday, this Sunday, has only 23 hours in it. So there's less of a chance that you are downloading and listening to the show. All the downloads we usually get at like 2:13 a.m. on Sunday won't exist, because there is no 2:13 a.m. The best episodes that we bring to you, one from this week and one from the Gist archives, this week is on Monday. I talked about Brittany Griner, the WNBA star who's been missing, by the time you hear this, maybe for 4 weeks, detained in Russia, possibly turned into a bargaining chip by Putin in the Russian regime on a drugs charge. I kind of go through the internet reaction to that and bums me out a little bit. We're really coming apart at the seams. So for the archival interview, I wanted to think of a guy who brings us all together. Perhaps the loveliest celebrity ever to come on The Gist will be joining me. It's a 2017 interview with Mr. Henry Winkler. The name of that episode, I remember, was called The Fonz on Fonts. I don't know if it worked as a pun, but he's just such a nice guy, as I think you will find. Henry Winkler, Brittany Griner, up next.
This is Jess Betancourt, the host of DNA ID, the only true crime podcast that exclusively covers cases solved using forensic genealogy. DNA ID goes behind the headlines to answer your questions about this remarkable new crime-solving tool, how it works, how cases are selected, why the cases were unsolved for so long, and how the justice system is addressing it. I include input from law enforcement to give you the inside scoop that we all crave with a straightforward, no-nonsense delivery. You can find DNA ID on any podcast platform. Episodes come out weekly on Mondays.
WNBA player Brittany Griner has been detained by Russia for, they say, hash oil in a vape pen. Though this news broke over the weekend, the detention happened weeks ago. How many weeks is unclear, maybe three. Griner is one of the stars of the WNBA. She's a dominant force on both sides of the court. She finished second in WNBA MVP voting last year, second in MVP voting 3 years ago. She was hurt in the season in between. She has 7 All-Star game appearances. What I'm trying to do is paint a picture of how important a player she is, how famous a player she is to WNBA fans. She would be the equivalent in men's terms of Joel Embiid, let's say. If Joel Embiid were detained by Russia, you would think you would hear about it earlier than 3 weeks after the fact. There is a strategy in not publicizing kidnappings or detentions by oppressive regimes which view high-profile Americans as prizes. The more heat there is on a kidnapping slash detention, the more it plays into the hands of a government which may want to turn a detainee into a bargaining chip. And Griner, a 6'9" non-binary out lesbian arrested on drug charges, may represent to Putin a prize who he could turn into a symbol of American decadence. Though, given that Griner's arrest seems to have predated the war, you wonder if people with Griner's interests at heart, including the U.S., might have been wiser to have clamored publicly for her release as soon as her detention was learned about. It's harder to threaten Putin with sanctions now that he has been sanctioned in ways that were inconceivable when Griner was first arrested. So, to some extent, sad as it is to say, Putin has already won. There isn't hope for Griner's release. I'm not saying that. Anthony Blinken, though taciturn in a press conference yesterday, did talk about the subject and say the U.S. was devoting resources to Griner's safe return. But Putin's objective in his disinformation campaigns is to identify a wedge in U.S. society and widen it. Griner's arrest should just engender a universal response, something like, oh my God, I hope she's unharmed. I hope everyone in a position of authority is doing all they can to that end. That's what every American should be saying. That's what they should be thinking and feeling and tweeting. It is not what they're tweeting. Twitter's algorithm for top tweets tells me about the situation via the eyes of some guy named Nick Adams, Twitter bio, best-selling author endorsed by President Trump, longer bio online. His books have been endorsed by Chuck Norris, Mike Huckabee, Sean Hannity, Dennis Prager, Ben Carson, Alan West, Dana Perino, and the NRA. So, Nick Adams, more than 250,000 Twitter followers, tweets, I hope when Brittany Griner eventually makes it back to the United States that she's found a new appreciation for the national anthem and everything it stands for. Because Griner had voiced her displeasure that the national anthem was played before WNBA games. And then they have a picture of Griner, Nick Adams does, with the label woke activist and WNBA player. So that is a criticism from the right that Griner has failed America. The opposite view put out by Deadspin headline, America has failed Brittany Griner, subhead. Why does one of the best basketball players in history have to play ball in Russia anyway? The answer to this article by Jesse Spector is America just doesn't have a big market for women's basketball, like it doesn't have a big market for Formula One racing or top-tier men's soccer players that go overseas to make more money than they could in the United States. The pay equity question is a somewhat interesting debate. But I do think now is the time to blame American society. But if that only plays into Putin's hands abstractly, consider this tweet from Andy Ngo. Andy Ngo is an incendiary Twitter presence with a shade under 1 million followers. He's famous for going toe-to-toe and often face-to-fist with Antifa. Ngo tweets, the Phoenix Suns confirms the woman arrested in a Russian airport is WNBA lesbian star player Brittany Griner. Arrest photo from a prior assault and domestic violence case. There are only, 10,000 pictures of Brittany Griner that aren't a mugshot. So this shows that America, or the slice of it optimized for views, has come apart exactly when it should be coming together and Putin's work is done. Only it may yet to be in the case of Brittany Griner.
We're not going to do anything stupid, are we?
Don't you hurt him.
Nobody's going to hurt anybody. We're all going to be like three little Fonzies here. And what's Fonzie like? Come on, Yolanda, what's Fonzie like?
Cool.
What?
Cool.
Correctamundo. And that's what we're going to be. We're going to be cool.
Although Fonzie is not only cool, Fonzie, or Henry Winkler, who played Fonzie famously, is author of the multi-series Hank Zipser books. Hank Zipser is a boy with dyslexia, and we have traced him, Henry, through how many books now?
34.
34 books. So this one that I have before me, which I think the subtitle is Always Watch Out for the Flying Potato Salad, which
right.
It sounds better in the original Latin, but
you know what? I couldn't put the original Latin on there because I would never be able to read it.
So these books come from
my life,
your life.
Yes.
And when did you know the word dyslexic?
I knew it when I was 31.
Wow.
My stepson, who came into my life when he was 4, was in the 3rd grade. We had him tested, and everything that they said about him was true about me.
And did you say, wait a minute?
I said I was pissed off.
Yeah. Well, I wish I
said I was angry because I got humiliated. I felt bad about myself. I was punished. I was grounded, all for no reason.
Yeah. Well, a lot of this is your parents, and they were
stricter. Well, because it's hereditary.
Yeah. But your dad was this multilinguist, brilliant
yes.
mathematician.
Yeah, it must have skipped him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or
maybe he was so short it went right above his head, you know.
So what coping mechanisms did you employ?
Humor.
Mm-hmm.
I was a class clown. And because I was so embarrassed all the time, I would make people laugh. And I could win the dance contests at the school dances.
Yeah. I think that came into play one time. Joni was bumped off the cheerleading squad.
That's right.
And you won the dance contest.
Well, in the sixth grade, my parents took me to see the Musayev Russian folk dancing. And it was so powerful. And I was so moved by it. I taught myself a bastardized version of the Kazatsky.
Yes.
So I did that in Temple.
Yes.
And I did it at school dances.
Yes.
And then I did it on Happy Days.
Were you ever in a production of Fiddler where they do that?
I was never in a production of Fiddler. Now I could probably play the horse, you know, but no, I never was.
What about memorizing scripts? I mean, you got your MFA from Yale
in
1970.
Yes.
That must have been hard.
It was hard because at that time, having no sense of self, it was very hard for me to focus.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard for me to just give over to the script, because I was always so worried all the time. And it has taken me basically up until now to become the actor I dreamt of being when I first started.
And you think the dyslexia was...
I do. I think that I was so not in charge of my own self. I was the bowl of Jell-O before you put it in the icebox to congeal. I was shaking all the time.
So here I am talking to the Fonz, but I want to talk about the font, because I never knew this until I read the foreword of this book. Font is amazing.
That's right. And I never knew about the font.
So this is new. The font that you use in the book.
This is brand new, and it's never been used in America
before.
Tell
us about this.
It was devised by a dad in Holland for his children who are dyslexic. I believe he himself is dyslexic. What he has done is the C, the opening of the C is farther apart than most C's. The ink is heavier. The words are weighted. The extension of the F is longer. The dissension of the G is longer. And he put together this font that made it easier for the reluctant reader.
Yes.
To join the eye and the page and have them be friends.
And I have to say that 100 out of 100 readers who did not know this and weren't dyslexic would in no way say there's something weird about this font. It just looks like it's a little whimsical and
it's
appropriate
whimsical
for a children's book.
Right.
But that's good. That's who
but
should be
when
reading
you
this
look at it.
Yeah.
You think, oh my gosh, this is really easy to read.
Mm-hmm.
And especially since Here's Hank is for the beginning reader, it's first, second, third grade, for the reluctant reader who thinks I can't do it, this helps them.
Are there other things that I, as a non-dyslexic person, don't even think about? There must be little changes that could help the dyslexic person more than, you know, I've ever even considered.
Understanding them and not making fun of
them. Sure.
If I were to go into a store and I paid for a piece of pizza with paper money, I would not know how much change I get back, nor would I know how to count the change in my hand before I left the store and used a calculator.
I know you've transacted most of your business in America, but in England or Europe, where the money is different size, different color, is that any easier?
No.
No.
It is not, because the number is the same.
Yeah.
Once you have now, I will say that the money here in Europe is way more beautiful.
Yes.
Yes.
And it used to be way more valuable, but now, not really.
We have such mundane money.
Although I do have to say, with the euro, you know, they have bridges and mostly bridges, some other forms of transport or infrastructure. But the point was, it can't be a real bridge. It just has to sort of symbolize, because if it was in one country, it would alienate that country. Yeah. So it's kind of an ecumenical currency.
So from the planet Orc, it could be a bridge.
Yes. And there's a Happy Days reference. So this gets us into a few of the questions I've always wanted
to
ask.
Ahead. I'm here. Okay, go.
Do you have a kinship with Jaleel White, who played Urkel?
I don't, except that I understand how difficult it is to play a character, have such wonderful success, have such a great fan base, and then you are only known for one character.
And Gomer Pyle is in the same field, where they start off as a minor character on a show and immediately they become the main
focus.
Now, this gets me to my next question.
Yes.
Do you bemoan...
Do you know Jaleel?
No, I've not met him. I know he's good at basketball. But,
see, there you go.
There's the Fonzie Urkel. And they're both great names, too, Fonzie and Urkel. And Gomer
Pyle. Produced by the same team.
Is this true?
Tom Miller, Bob Boyette, Eddie Milkus.
Yeah. Was part of the becoming a different character, was being a tough character, a tough guy?
No, I don't think it mattered.
It did, okay.
No. Now, certainly the Fonz was everybody I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And I never was, you know. I was never in that kind of control. I never had that kind of social life. I was never the apple of my, you know, circles, of friends. But I don't know even if that sentence made sense.
The apple of the circle of friends?
Yes, the apple of their eye.
The apple of the eye.
I was never a leader.
Yes.
You know? I was the core or the stem. So it took me a while to relax into being Henry.
You mentioned character actor, and
yes,
it's a crude distinction, but often a character actor is a really good actor who doesn't have the matinee idol looks. But as the Fonz, you're this sex symbol. And
right,
then once they cast you as the Fonz, you become the Fonz. And I guess everyone agrees, this is a good-looking, sexy guy.
Okay, but I think that that the good looks was not really, I was not, you know, classically great-looking. I think that they liked the character,
yes,
ergo I became good looking.
Right. And everyone on the show agrees, oh, this is the guy that,
well,
every girl
I was better
wants
looking
to get with
than a lot of people on the show.
Yeah, that's very important,
you know,
to
I
act
mean,
next to
really,
Anson
Williams.
Yeah. Well, he was a good looking one. I was
he
thinking
was,
of
he had the
Ralph
Nauff.
I was thinking of Donnie.
Ralph Nauff is very handsome.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Fonzie's inability to say love. This is
wrong.
To say
wrong.
Oh, to say he's wrong.
Yes.
Yes.
I could say, hey, listen, I want to tell you something. I love this interview. But I could not say.
Could not admit.
I could not admit that I was.
Okay.
That I was.
So here's my question.
What?
Does Happy Days invent that?
Is
that
the rest of this interview is the Fonz.
That'd be okay.
Okay, man.
All right. So, by the way, where did a guy from Milwaukee get this accent?
It was very simple. He was born in Milwaukee and he studied in New York City.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Where? Which section?
I would say the Bronx.
Yeah.
That's where Gary Marshall came from.
So
his real name was Marshallelli.
Yeah. No, yeah, I know.
Right. Get to the question.
Not saying wrong.
Right.
Was that invented? Is this an old vaudeville bit?
It was. I don't know.
Yeah.
I do not know that. The writers, we had many, many writers.
Yes.
And they came up with this, and that's what I did. I couldn't eat liver.
Right.
I couldn't say
you were ashamed of admitting it. You didn't want Richie to divulge this as a consequence of his high school reporting.
It was my kryptonite.
I remember that one.
Right.
But
and there's a great episode where Ron Howard holds it up to me and says, come on, take a bite.
Liver is pretty much gone. Kids no longer.
I used to have liver. My parents were very short Germans, and we had liver and onions and mashed potatoes and tongue and boiled potatoes.
Yeah.
With brown mustard.
Oh, my God. Health food. Yeah.
I want it.
Yeah. I was in a German restaurant yesterday. I asked for vegetables. They gave me boiled celery.
Is that true?
Yes.
But what about Spätzle?
Yeah, Spätzle.
Hello. Yes. Yeah.
So the question, though, with wrong is,
yes,
as much as we decry the three-camera before a studio audience, I get the sense.
Wait a minute. Who's decrying it?
Yeah, some people do.
They do?
Sophisticates.
Sophisticates.
This is so-called sophisticates. I get the sense.
Oh, take your A-frames and get out of here.
That you played off the crowd,
yes,
and when they were loving it, it became its own thing because of the reaction. If you hadn't gotten that live reaction, maybe you wouldn't have.
I don't know
like
that's true,
mm-hmm,
but I had a wonderful time with the audience.
Yeah.
The audience gives you an energy that it's unlike anything.
Like
doing theater. I love going to and being in a play.
There were times when the audience would laugh, maybe at not exactly the part you wanted them to,
yes,
and you'd give them a look, and it would stay on camera.
Well, because you know what? They screwed up the timing.
Yeah,
timing is everything.
But you give them a look in character, like,
hey,
Fonzie going, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
Yeah.
Calm the down.
Now, what did you do? I know that Seinfeld had this problem with Kramer would come in the room, the audience would clap, and they wanted to get rid of this. So eventually they said, no more clapping.
We didn't do that.
No. You indulged in it.
No.
Hey, you know what I'm going to do to you? I'm going to pop you one so you'll stop playing games. Now, I would let him go unless you want to make medical history. Good choice.
Very nice. Give me a bitch.
And then Chachi came in the room and there was more clapping.
Yeah. So basically, you only had to write half a show. It's the height of your
popularity. You know what they did? They only wrote half a script for Robin Williams. It was scene, scene, scene. Robin will do something here. Scene. Everybody had lines, but Robin.
Your answer about knowing the Urkel experience and typecasting.
Right.
Do you celebrate? Do you bemoan? What do you think about the death of monoculture? You know, the idea that there were three networks, we all knew what was going on. It was very hard for you to escape that role because that's all we had.
Yeah, but you know what? I've been able to do all of this wonderful stuff. I'm going to do a new show with Bill Hader on HBO.
Oh, good.
We did a wonderful show where I traveled the world with George Foreman, Bill Shatner, and Terry Bradshaw, and Jeff Dye, the stand-up comic.
Yeah.
We're going again.
I saw you guys in a dojo.
That's
at
right.
At one point.
That's right.
Yes.
And we're now going again on that trip. I got to do Arrested Development. I got to do Children's Hospital. Now, you cannot tell those people.
Yeah.
Brilliantly funny people. I did not understand more than two jokes in about 7 years. I had no idea what I was saying.
You were obsessed with jetpacks. There's nothing wrong with that.
How about that? Was that a great episode?
Yes.
That was amazing. Not good on the scrotum, but very funny.
So, now that you have tenure, what are you going to do?
I'm going to do what anybody in my position would do.
Please say what I hope you're going to say.
I'm going to design the world's first consumer jetpack.
Yeah! That was totally it! That is exactly what I wanted to do. Whoa! Okay, now I hope you say...
You're going to help me.
Yes! That was it again! We are totally in
on the same page!
But yeah, and that's a great example because this is a niche show. It's a 15-minute show.
It would never have gotten on.
But for the fracture.
That's right. Yeah. Now, what happens? If you build it, they will come. Good television, you find good television. It's word of mouth. Today you've got Catastrophe, which is, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it is incredibly funny and smart. And Rob Delaney and...
The Irish couple, and they have the baby.
It's incredible.
And if a network tried to put that on from an era where you couldn't...
Wouldn't have gotten
right,
on.
Right. What was the compromise with you and leather jackets?
Only if I was in a scene with my motorcycle.
Could you wear the leather?
That's
otherwise,
right.
It was too offensive to
crime.
Middle America.
Okay.
Yes. So we go from that
we just
to...
saw Goliath.
Yeah.
Okay? Unbelievable show. So if you build it, we will find it. What a lovely conversation.
I enjoyed it very much. Henry Winkler is the author of the Hank Zibzer books, and the newest one is Always Watch Out for the Flying Potato Salad. Here's Hank. Thank you, Henry. Great to meet you.
Thank you.
And that's it for this, the Saturday show. Thank you, assistant producer Corey Wara and senior producer Joel Patterson and director of Daylight Savings Time for Peachfish Productions, Michelle Pesca. The Gist is presented in collaboration with Libsyn's AdvertiseCast. For advertising inquiries, check out advertisecast.com/thegist. Oomperoo, deperoo, dooperoo. And we shall speak to you on Monday. Get some sleep.